You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Albert Mohler, Brian Wolfmiller, Hans Feeney, and Will Wheaton at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th at Concordia University, Chicago.
We're watching it happen all around us. You were tempted to say, you know, until about 15 minutes ago, it was perfectly normal to talk about men as men and women as women, and that being what they call the binary, not controversial in any way. We've watched that erode in business, in the media, and yes, even in the medical community. We're going to be talking about two recent articles in medical journals on gender affirmation and the other on organ harvesting. Wesley Smith joins us. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's an attorney and consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online, and author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. Wesley, welcome back.
Thank you.
Why have so many in the medical community, especially those who sit on ethics boards and the like, gone all in all of a sudden for not just transitioning people with gender dysphoria, but transitioning children with gender dysphoria?
You know, that's a very interesting question. The way I look at it, and of course the medical intelligentsia and the establishment haven't called me to get my opinion, but I think there's a moral panic going on. That is, there's this incredible ideology, this idea that if children are not granted puberty blockers, and even, by the way, mastectomies on biological girls as young as 13, that they'll commit suicide, and we have to stop suicide. And it's something that is of great concern to me, because we're talking about doing things such as blocking puberty, which we don't know the long-term consequences about, which can have some side effects, for example, weakening bones, and in a situation in which sometimes these children who are diagnosed as having gender dysphoria, by the time they reach adulthood, they no longer are transgender. And so this idea that we have to rush in and stop puberty so that when they have the sex change surgery, they won't have the wrong, quote-unquote, secondary sex characteristics, I think is very disturbing.
What did you recently read to this effect?
Well, as you know, I peruse the bioethics journals and the medical journals because I have a theory, and it's proved true for the last 25 years, that if you want to know what's going to go wrong next in society, read the professional journals. Because a lot of these your audience probably considers, or at least many do, very bizarre ideas and I think destructive ideologies often suddenly come down to the popular level as this big shock to the populace. But they've been churning in the professional journals and in the professional symposia above, you know, the new local newspaper or the local newscast for years. And so I always make a point of reading these various journal articles. And I came across one in the Journal of Medical Ethics. And just so your audience knows, this isn't some little corner person wearing a pyramid on their head made of tin foil. This comes out of Oxford University. I mean, this is big time bioethical journal, major mainstream thinking. And if something is published there, it is in the mainstream view of bioethics or medicine. And so I saw an article that was entitled Medically Assisted Gender Affirmation. By the way, notice the term gender affirmation. So if a child thinks, and an adult too, I suppose, thinks that if they're a biological boy but they identify as a girl, then what we do is we affirm their subjective belief from that they're a girl, and that's called gender affirmation. So the title was Medically Assisted Gender Affirmation When Children and Parents Disagree. Well, one would think that in such a serious circumstance that the parents should be the ones who get to decide whether or not any of these more radical treatments are engaged. And according to this article, that in cases, perhaps they call them more severe cases, but what's a severe case in this circumstance, that when a parent refuses to permit these kind of gender-changing or gender-dysphoric interventions, that could be considered child neglect. In other words, if a parent stops a doctor from blocking puberty, that parent perhaps should be treated as harshly as we would a parent who didn't adequately nourish their child or allowed them to live in vermin-infested abodes or refused to educate them. In other words, the bottom line is they want to take the ultimate control of these transgender kids away from parents and force these kinds of interventions, whether the parents like it or not.
Is this going to be supported, do you think, by kind of the powers that be that would ordinarily get kicked into gear when there's neglect, genuine neglect?
Yeah, I do think that will happen. We've already seen a few cases where parents were sued in terms of losing custody and also in terms of child welfare cases. There was a case, I believe it was in Canada, where the judge told the father that if you call your son, biological son, a boy, or use the pronoun he, that the judge would consider it an act of violence against the child, and threatened that basically the father would lose all parental rights. Luckily, that was overturned on appeal as too draconian. But this is the kind of thing that is beginning to happen in courts. And the reason why these articles are written isn't just so people can be entertained. These articles then, because these are issues of what in court, what are often called issues of first impression, meaning the courts have not really dealt extensively with these issues before. There may not be a lot of statutes on the books that are actually on point to these particular controversies. So when that happens, a judge will say, well, what do the experts think? Well, that's why these articles are written. Here's what the experts think. And so the experts, somebody will come in for the advocate for blocking that child's puberty, will say, and they'll say, look, this article in the Journal of Medical Ethics by all of these doctors and bioethicists out of Oxford University says that if a parent doesn't fulfill these desires of the child, that parent is negligent. And the judge may look at that and say, oh, well, that's very interesting, father. Why are you interfering? Or mother, why are you interfering? You know, are you negligent? And you can see where this can lead. And this is certainly not the only article of this kind. You also have the major American pediatrician organization in this country. They haven't said that parents should be forced to do it, but they have supported the idea of these kinds of puberty blocking and so forth. Then there's another pediatricians organization that opposes it. So you have kind of a mess there. But the mainstream pediatricians organization supports blocking puberty and these other interventions because they think it's a way to prevent suicide and this kind of thing.
Finally, on that subject, with about 30 seconds, do you expect insurance companies to go along with this?
Oh, that's a good question. In the Obamacare debate, President Obama's HHS, Department of HHS, forced insurance companies to cover these kinds of procedures, at least for adults. And that's an example of how medicine these days isn't just about treating illness. It's about promoting radical social change. So you medicalize some issues and some problems, and then they become part of the healthcare system, and that pushes these things right along. So, yes, I would think that these would be paid for by insurance.
Wesley Smith is our guest, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. On the other side of the break, we turn to another subject, also found in a medical journal, pushing the harvesting of kidneys, not from patients who have died, but from patients who are still dying. Stay tuned.
We're commanded to serve our families and our communities to the best of our abilities. And, you know, we should take our vocational responsibilities in these areas very seriously. And I think that involves making sure that we create conditions in America that continue to allow religious freedom and allow our Lutheran faith to continue to thrive, and that we can continue to evangelize.
Mark Hemingway talking about his joint presentation with his wife Molly at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The fact of the matter is that on those particular issues of religious liberty and preserving our faith from the onslaught of bad cultural and political ideas, things have never been more dire, and it's more important than ever.
You can meet and hear journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway making the case for Christian political engagement at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Give your spouse the gift of time for Valentine's Day with a gift certificate from The Cleaning Authority. Call toll-free 1-866-827-0062 or visit thecleaningauthority.com. Forget the flowers, candy, and jewelry this year with a Valentine's Day gift certificate from our favorite cleaning service, The Cleaning Authority, 866-827-0062 or thecleaningauthority.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Wesley Smith is our guest. We're turning to the subject of a New England Journal of Medicine article that has some pretty chilling ideas about when you should be able to donate your organs. Wesley, make the case here. There's this person, WB, in the New England Journal of Medicine, who has ALS, is imminently dying, and wants to donate a kidney and thereby end their life, more or less. Why shouldn't they be able to do that?
Well, there's something in a very important ethical rule in organ transplant medicine. It's generically known as the dead donor rule, and that says you do not take vital organs from living patients. There is the one exception of altruistic donation that I'll get to in a second. And you also do not, as part of the dead donor rule, you do not take any action that will harm that patient. In other words, you don't do something you would not otherwise do to the patient because they're going to be an organ donor. And so what in this particular ALS case, the author, who's a doctor, Joshua Meserich, wanted to take this patient's kidney, this patient who was still dying, was still alive, while he was alive, because it would be better to preserve the kidney's viability. And then once the kidney was taken, move him back to the intensive care unit and take away all life support so that he died. Well, that is violating the dead donor rule because you are doing something to that patient only for the purpose of organ donation. You are harming that patient. You are doing something that could actually cause the death of that patient. You're never supposed to kill patients in terms of organ harvesting either. And the reason this is coming more and more to the fore, and this is in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is probably the most respected or influential, we might say, medical journal in the world. So when it's in the New England Journal of Medicine, it's really scary that you have had articles published in the New England Journal of Medicine and other very prominent medical and bioethics journals saying that if euthanasia is legal, we should conjoin euthanasia, meaning the killing of a patient, with organ harvesting, if that's what the patient wants. Well, you're talking about taking organs from people who would not otherwise be dead except for being killed. And you're also talking about inducing patients to go for euthanasia or, for example, in this case of WB, go for the kidney donation so that because they feel that their deaths will have greater value than their lives. Well, that violates every ethical precept that organ donation and organ transplant medicine is predicated upon. And you now even have some articles being written saying, well, gee, when euthanasia is legal, why not skip the lethal injection part and just kill them via taking their organs? I mean, that is turning people away from being patients in a healthcare system and into being mere organ farms for those who are going to receive these organs. And that kind of utilitarian thinking just denies the sanctity and equality of human life, and also can begin to have a skewing effect on how we perceive ill and disabled patients, where we might begin to look at them and saying, gee, you know, your life doesn't have a very good quality, but your kidneys could really go to somebody who could recover if you were dead and they received your kidneys. We do allow, by the way, living donations of kidneys and slices of liver, not the whole liver, obviously, in altruistic cases. And that's through volunteer work. But the point of that is not the patient is not going to be harmed, supposedly. The idea is the kidney you can give one kidney and completely survive and lead a full and complete life. Now, that's not risk-free. Occasionally, a kidney donor dies from the procedure. But it is I would call it a minor bending of the dead donor rule, because you're not treating that kidney donor as a thing. You are intending to have a full recovery for that donor, and that donor has to go through all kinds of tests, psychological tests and so forth, to make sure that this is and health tests to make sure that this is an appropriate person to donate in that way. But with that one exception aside, we do not take organs from living people, and certainly not as part of a end-of-life process which will probably hasten their death or certainly cause their bodies harm before they die.
Wesley Smith is Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's an attorney and consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online, and author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. You'll find a link to his columns and to the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Wesley, thanks.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series with Pastor Jonathan Fisk on the Lord's Supper and the Church. Pastor Fisk is the author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, Without Flesh. We'll also discuss Academy Award winners and losers with Pastor Ted Geese. And on Friday, we'll talk with Dr. Jean Edward Veith about the post-Christian view of the body. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.